Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The following broadcast may contain free thinking and open-minded discussion, ideas, skepticism, and adult subject matter. Topics will be discussed using adult language, sometimes gratuitously. Get ready to move the conversation forward. This ain't your granddad's news and comment show. This is I Doubt It Podcast with Brittany Page and Jesse Dollimore.
Welcome to the show, episode 935. I'm your host, Jesse Dollimore, joined today by your other host, Brittany Page.
So I have a question for our listeners who are Uber drivers, because we were recently in an Uber and we were talking about stuff. I would say generally in Ubers, we try not to talk, especially if there are those cameras that are recording you inside of the vehicle. And so this question is really surrounding the Uber drivers who have cameras inside their cars. I want to know what happens to that footage, because we were having a conversation about something and you told a joke about something, and I had a moment where, similar to like they do in The Office, where they look directly into the camera, you know, on the show The Office, into the camera.
I'm tracking what we're talking about now. Before, I was like, where is this going? I have no idea, but now I know.
I looked directly into the camera where they were recording us.
Yeah.
Almost like
Jim from The Office.
Oh, God. Did you hear what was just said? Was that recorded? And so what did the Uber drivers do with all of that footage? I mean, I'm assuming they just hold on to it in case something happens, because there have been violent episodes. There have been people who puke in the car or damage it in some way, and then they need proof of that. Like, I understand in those situations, but are they deleting it daily? Like, if there's no official thing that goes on?
I think, and this is just a guess, but my guess would be those devices that record both the road and what takes place in the cabin of the car, they just overwrite the data. It's like a 36 hour or whatever loop, and then as soon as it gets to the end, it just starts over recording over that time.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
And then what if you have passengers who are yucking it up in the back seat and telling jokes that cause one of them to stare directly into the camera with discomfort?
They don't know what's going on in the back.
Well, that's my question. Are they like stowing away evidence just in case?
What was the joke that I told that was so alarming that it would stop you in your tracks?
I don't remember anymore. It's not that it stopped me in my tracks. It was just like, because we always pay attention to being recorded. Like, even in public, if someone's taking a photo, you know, we'll like turn our back.
Get out of people's pictures. And I have done that since I was in my 20s working on Capitol Hill.
Yeah. So it's just, you know, we're trying to like get out of the way, and I don't know, just an aversion to being recorded generally.
For sure. Which is kind of strange, being that we're being recorded right now, Brittany.
Yes, but we know that, and
we
press record, and it's a little different when you're in control of it.
Yeah, I wonder, and we're not notable enough to be recognized, but I wonder, in a city like this, when you have a congressperson jump in your car, or a senator, or a government official who's well known, I wonder if they squirrel that footage away.
Mm-hmm.
Or in L.A., if a famous actor or somebody gets in a car,
mm-hmm.
I wonder if they squirrel that away.
Yeah. So if you're an Uber driver, tell us. We would love to know the inside deets of what's going on.
Maybe there's like an online repository in the cloud somewhere, or of all of the footage that's been saved
mm-hmm.
among Uber drivers.
Yeah. You know, I would actually prefer that they have the recording going, because I had a bad Uber experience recently with a man. I was in my Uber and I was going to my hair appointment. I didn't want to deal with the parking situation. Don't judge me. And they...
What parking situation? You mean your ability to parallel park that situation?
No, but it's also like the parking limit is like...
Oh, yeah.
It isn't long enough to cover my appointment. And so I would have to be like going out and moving the car, and it's just stressful to deal with all that.
That's a situation for sure. You're right.
So, but also, yeah, I can't parallel park. I used to be able to. I haven't done it in a long time. Maybe I could. So this Uber driver, a man, picks me up from where I live. And I get in the car, and the first thing he says to me is, oh, you live here?
Is this your domicile? Is this where you sleep and shower and live?
And I'm like, oh, my God. Yeah, I do live here. And then, you know, he proceeds to talk to me, and he's like, oh, and where are you going today? Am I taking you to work? I'm like, no, you're actually...
What's going on?
You're taking me to my hair appointment. And he's like, oh, you'd look really hot with really dark hair.
It's dudes. It's just dudes. It's the arrogance, the unearned arrogance of fucking dudes.
And I'm like, okay. And then we start talking about politics because I'm in the car. And
well, it was also pre-election.
I think it was pre-election. And so he starts telling me that he basically is a Trump supporter. I mean, he doesn't come out and say it, but you can tell that you're dealing with someone who supports Trump. And so he's like, oh, well, tell me why you don't like him. Do you think you'd be able to specify reasons why? And I'm sure.
Like a challenge?
Yeah, I'm like, sure, how long do we have? So I spend like 5 minutes talking in depth, so much so that he starts turning around to look at me in the back seat. Like, wow, she's really going for it.
Yeah.
And then I complete my summary of all of the various reasons why he's a dangerous and unhinged person to place in a position of power. And one of the things that he highlights is that he doesn't particularly have an issue with the sexual assault allegations. And the reason for that is because, and this is a quote, he's a man, I'm a man, and I want to have as many women as I can. So I get that aspect of it.
Even if it includes... having women against their will?
Part of me was like, I don't know if he even knows what he's saying.
Said by the guy who just wanted to reinforce, I know where you live, and I'm going to give you unsolicited beauty advice about how hot or not you'd be with your color of hair.
Yeah, and so I immediately went in, talked to my hairstylist, who's a woman, and she told me that, you know, women have all these stories of men being dangerous.
Yeah.
and stepping over boundaries in public. But she said she had an Uber driver one time who picked her up like in the middle of the night. She was alone. And he started telling her that he's an author who writes books and that he's writing stories about an Uber driver who becomes a serial killer of women or something like that.
Wow.
And
that's intentional. That's intending to elicit a response from her of fear.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh shit, is this guy a psycho?
Totally. So all of this to say, these would be two situations where it would be great to have the conversation recorded, because then when you report it to Uber, you can be like, and by the way, they had a camera in the car. So hopefully you can get, you know, actual footage of this conversation that took place or whatever, you know. I think maybe it's just like police body cams. Maybe it is actually good to record what's going on in the car.
The problem with that is I don't, and now we're getting really into the weeds about Uber's policies, but they don't own that footage.
That's the driver's.
That's the problem with these gig economy kind of fucking Uber, the food delivery. It's all like, they're not our employees. We're just the conduit through which they can connect with you so they can give you a ride.
Right.
It's a problem.
Totally.
Yeah. Also, men are a fucking problem. Like, what's the impetus there? What's the motivation? Just to have someone feel nervous and on edge and unsafe?
I mean...
because what are the chances that fucking Uber driver is really an author who's writing short stories or books about a serial killer Uber driver who's preying on women?
Yeah, in that case, I think that certainly was intentional. And in my case, I think he was just a dumb guy who...
maybe just goes through the world showing predation of women.
Yeah, who just doesn't really know how he's coming across, maybe, or he does and he doesn't care, and, you know.
Yeah.
But also, it's uncomfortable because even if you are a person who would normally check someone on this... you know, if you were, like, not in someone's vehicle.
Yeah.
vulnerable to the whims of who's behind the wheel, you can't necessarily check someone in that situation. You're not able to safely remove yourself from the situation. You need to get out of that situation first and then worry about how to deal with it later, unfortunately. So, all right. Didn't mean to get so serious about all that. So... let us know what you think, or if you're an Uber driver, call and let us know, 657-464-7609, or send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. We do have some listener communication to get to. This first message is from Anonymous, because people can remain anonymous. And if you want to remain anonymous in your communication, then all you have to do is sign off your email with Anonymous.
Or just don't include your name.
Correct.
Because we're only reading the body of the email.
That is correct. I know, stale topic. Let me begin by saying I voted for Hillary Clinton and Kamala Harris, full stop. Next, I want to say that I'm not misogynistic by any means.
Uh-oh.
And then there's a...
oh, no.
Well, no, here's what I like about this email is there's an emoticon where there's a hand on the chin. Like, almost like after saying it, this person is like, that doesn't sound great. I'm not setting this up very well.
I know. It's like saying, no offense... and then you know what follows is offense. Or, I'm not racist, but...
yeah, so I think they're recognizing, not great. Okay, next I want to say I'm not misogynistic by any means.
Not great, but the words were already typed. I must continue with what I've written. Go ahead.
But I do have to believe that 3 to 5% of Democrats are. We had two of the most qualified female candidates go up against the most unqualified candidate of all time, and the Democrats lost both times.
Yeah.
Kamala had over $1 billion in fundraising, top celebrity endorsements, Taylor Swift, Beyonce, Oprah, everyone from Dave Bautista to Sam Elliott, even dozens of top Republican politicians, including Dick Cheney, and yet 3 to 5% didn't give a damn. I know it's an uphill climb for us anyway because of the Electoral College, but the apathetic symptoms are evident. Yes, I truly believe that 3 to 5% just didn't want to vote for a woman. Maybe it's a certain feeling some voters have due to their cultural upbringing, or maybe it's the plain, stupid-ass misogyny in just a small percentage of us. This I can say for certain, the Democrats are not 100% misogyny-free. As much as I would love for the Democrats to have the first woman president, I fear that the glass ceiling is probably more bulletproof than we think. Do we need to put up another aging white male candidate in 2028, if there even is an election? Anonymous.
Well, I'm glad to know that it didn't end up being misogynistic. I think a lot of people, and I catch myself falling into this trap, less anymore, but that the Democrats don't have the same problems as the Republican Party. Like, we trust the science. We're not conspiracy theorists.
Right.
And that's, we're humans. We're prone to all of those fallibilities in our logic and our thinking.
Totally.
I mean, just, and trust me, I know, because I read some YouTube comments and there's a lot of dumb shits. A lot of people who are prone to the same kind of failure in logic that Republicans are. But let me address a couple things here. Celebrity endorsements. I mean, look, there is not one specific thing you can point to as to why Kamala Harris lost. But celebrity endorsements, they don't matter. They're great, you know. The one thing that does get to me is the nearly $1 billion raised and then... it ended up being that close. That's like, man, there was enthusiasm. There was energy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Republican endorsements may have been part of the problem, part of the many, many reasons, the points of light that would point to Kamala Harris losing. It's when you when you're campaigning as the choice of Republicans and you're trying to set yourself apart from fucking Republicans, it's the same thing I bitched about and complained about during the convention in Chicago, that it didn't sit well with me. And I just supplanted my own reason and logic and instinct for these quote-unquote expert political geniuses who were running the campaign. And I think they fucked up. But we have the same... I also believe that there is certainly an element of that people just didn't want to vote for a woman. And that's... It runs through.
Yeah, so I have a lot of things to say about this. It's really hard for me to not relate this directly to the Blake Lively lawsuit, honestly. But I'll get to that in a moment. And yes, I am capable of connecting this to that. So... Sure, absolutely. Misogyny played a role. The degree to which that it played a role, I don't know. But this conversation always starts to feel a little bit like when a female director's movie doesn't do well at the box office, and it's like, oh boy, we got to take a break from these ladies directing these movies because they are not getting
right.
it done.
Or especially that particular director whose film didn't do well, they're like, they're off the market. No, they don't get another chance.
Yeah, I mean, it's just men, this doesn't happen with men, and it's very frustrating. And I understand that misogyny did play a role, but I think, like you said, you can't point to one thing. There's a misplaced emphasis here on what the problem is. And if we root it in women, and we try to, we say, sorry, ladies, you know, everyone's not getting on board with you, so you know, all things in due time. You'll get there eventually,
right, right.
hopefully.
Let's not rush things.
Yeah, I think we need to actively combat that in every way we can. And there's, by the way, tens of millions of Americans who didn't vote.
Yeah.
And part of that is they don't think that politics impacts them. They don't have time to worry about politics because they're trying to survive. We need to tap into that. And that's, again, I know shocking. I'm going to bring it back to class solidarity, but that's where the emphasis needs to be. And
which is why you don't share a stage with Liz fucking Cheney.
Absolutely.
And a slew of Republicans who don't give a goddamn about class solidarity.
Absolutely. And there just was not a direct appeal to the poor and working class to mobilize and... from the campaign, right?
Yeah.
The campaign needs to be sending that message. And so I think we need to do a much better job of that. Unfortunately, I think over the next 4 years, there's going to be a lot of pain and strife when these public assistance programs get cut to pay for Donald Trump's tax cuts for the wealthy and corporations, when he implements his tariffs. There's going to be a lot of pain. And what Democrats need to do, and here's the scary thing, is they're not really showing that they're going to be the opposition party. They're not showing strength in solidarity against Donald Trump. And we're going to get to several Democrats during the show who are exhibiting this. But that's what they need to be doing, because over the next 4 years, as Americans start to feel the pain of Donald Trump's policies, they need to be the ones coming out and speaking in very plain terms. He told you he was going to do this. He said he was going to lower prices. He got in here. He implemented these policies. The pain you're experiencing is a direct result of his policies for the wealthy and for the corporations. The Republicans are not on your side. They need to be plain about that instead of, you know, him hawing and going, oh, yeah, we can extend our hand across the aisle and we can join together. And Republicans aren't bad people. They just have different priorities.
Right.
No. No.
We can disagree and then shake hands and go have a beer as Cenk Uygur shares a stage with fucking white supremacist Charlie Kirk.
Yeah, and we have emails we're reading about that next.
Oh,
how'd
okay.
you know?
I did not know. I did not know.
But that's a perfect example, right?
Yeah.
So now the other aspect of this is the Democrats are not 100% misogyny free. This is so true. And
yeah.
it goes back to what you were saying about how a lot of people, I think, go, oh, it's the left. They value science. They value evidence. They're trying to check their biases. No, we all fall victim to this.
Yeah.
We all do. And the reason this is related to the Blake Lively lawsuit, and I'll try to make this quick.
Well, also, you need to summarize that. A lot of people don't know what the fuck you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, no, I will. So Blake Lively, obviously, famous actress. She's been in a lot of different movies. The Simple Favor is one that comes to mind. Anyway, she was
she's in an A-list Hollywood family. Her husband is Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah. She a long career, yeah. You know, from the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants decades ago, and she's still in primetime movies. She was just in a movie called It Ends With Us. Now, I didn't see the movie, but I heard about it. It's based on a book by, I believe, Colleen Hoover. I also didn't read this book, but it's about breaking generational domestic violence. And she was in this movie with co-actor, co-star, Justin Baldoni, who is also the director and who is also the co-chair of the film studio that was behind the movie, Wayfair. And I don't know if you got any of these videos presented to you on social media, but when the movie came out a few months ago, there was all of this drama that was all over the internet. If you went on TikTok, my TikTok feed was filled with videos about this movie and the drama that was going on behind the scenes and how Blake Lively didn't get along with Justin Baldoni, the star. And then there started to be kind of this turn toward old interviews with Blake Lively where she was being rude.
This I remember.
Yeah, she was being rude to this interviewer.
Well, somebody made a comment about having a stomach or a belly or having gained weight or something.
Her baby bump. She was pregnant in an interview.
And she was like, well, she was pushing back against body talk. Like, we don't have to talk about this. What are we talking about this for?
Yeah, so people started attacking her for that, saying she's a bitch.
Yeah.
She obviously got married on a plantation to Ryan Reynolds. Not great.
Yeah.
That got dug back up. People were talking about that. So things turned very toxic, and there were headlines about, like, is Blake Lively getting canceled? Is this the end of her career? And so all this had happened. Fast forward to this week, last week, Friday, she files a lawsuit. And the New York...
And we learned that all of that, almost all of that previous controversy was not an organic movement. It was orchestrated by big money to quote-unquote cancel her.
Absolutely, yeah. Justin Baldoni, the co-star and director of the film, had been accused of sexual misconduct by Blake Lively and other women who worked on the film. And she asked for many things to be changed. They didn't have policies in place. Justin Baldoni was improvising physical intimacy with her that was not previously written down, was not rehearsed, was talking about whether or not he's attracted to her. There was a producer who's named in the lawsuit who showed a video of his wife giving birth, and Blake Lively thought that she was seeing porn on his phone. Like, she's like, stop, what is this? Is this porn? And he's like, no, it's my wife giving birth. She's like, I don't want to see this. This, why are you showing me your wife's vagina? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
So all kinds of things were going on. They agreed not to retaliate against her once she raised all these concerns. Now we know in the lawsuit, instead of following that agreement to not retaliate, Justin Baldoni went to a crisis PR firm previously who worked with Johnny Depp against Amber Heard.
Right.
And they launched this media campaign to bring her down. And in the text messages, it says, we can bury anyone.
Yeah, undercover.
Yeah.
Media campaign. It was all in the shadows.
Yeah, and I would go recommend anyone read the document. New York Times published it in full. It's 80 pages. There's screenshots of text messages. It shows the proof. But what this speaks to, this went viral. And everyone was taken in by the narrative that Blake Lively is a bitch and isn't deserving of her station in life and that we should tear her down and attack her. And it was all because a man was afraid that he was going to be publicly taken down by sexual misconduct accusations.
Yeah.
And he decided to go and employ a firm to protect him from this, to get a hold of the media narrative. And we were all seeing these videos having no idea that this was orchestrated to make us feel a particular way. But how did they know that they could do that? How did they know they could manipulate the public to feel a certain way against Blake Lively?
Well, they understand internalized misogyny or just outright fucking hatred and disrespect for women.
That is absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't just men who started to hate her. It was also women.
Right.
And Christina Ricci actually, Christina Ricci?
I think so. I think that's it. Yeah.
I'm going to read something she put in her story really quickly. Ari Blake Lively, and Amber Heard, to be honest, misogyny exploits the jealousy women feel for each other, specifically when it comes to beautiful women and girls. The fact that mean girls are always beautiful is no coincidence. The ease in which women are manipulated into hating each other, even feminist women, is something no one wants to talk about. This is yet another reminder to question our willingness to burn any woman. That includes beautiful, successful women who dare to have a voice. Now, this is a little like heavy-handed with the beautiful stuff. Yeah, I don't think that needs to necessarily be in there, but I think it's speaking to the truth of how we can be manipulated into hating other women and tearing other women down. Now, that goes for women and it goes for men. And this comes back to Kamala Harris because Democrats are not immune from misogyny. And even Democrats who say, well, I voted for Kamala Harris. I had no issue with a woman. I was excited to vote for a woman. That doesn't mean that you can't also be, you know, victim to some of these manipulations against other women. And so it's not like a yes or no switch, you know, an on and off switch, the misogyny that we have. It's more of a spectrum. And we can kind of fall along the spectrum depending on different events or different things that we read. And that's why it's important to constantly keep yourself in check. Those are different biases that come up and what it might be activating for you. And keep yourself in check on an ongoing basis because we're never over these things.
Yeah. Well, it's also the media showed misogyny by the standard to which they held Kamala Harris and did not hold Donald Trump.
Absolutely.
Like, she needed to justify every policy stance or whether she had policies, and he could say the most outlandish, insane fucking thing, and crickets.
Totally.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you for the email.
Yes, anonymous. Now, these next two are not anonymous, and they are both about TYT. So we have been, I would say, vaguely critical of TYT over the past few months. I did a video on their views on homelessness over a year ago. Mm-hmm. So it's at least been going on since October 2023. But I don't know how long you would say.
And occasionally we'll name a name, talk about Anna or Jank, but not. It's no. We're not. We've never been within the TYT network. We don't owe them any exposure to ourselves. We're not into the drama of independent media and all. That's not our thing. So we haven't really, really gotten into it. But now it's getting to a fever pitch where he's sharing a stage with a white supremacist, someone that lefties would call a fucking Nazi, and literally talking about having a beer and literally shaking hands, holding hands with one another on stage. It was fucking gross and dangerous.
Yeah, so I'm going to read a portion of two emails that kind of touch on, I think, an important element of some of this. So this first one is from during the election night live stream when you guys brought up Anna Kasparian from TYT and y'all said she wasn't serious or something. I was curious why the criticism. Do you guys dislike all of TYT? I'm just curious because I think all the independent media people like you two, David Pakman, and everyone else, shouldn't you all get together on good terms so you can combine all of the audiences and we can all plan better for the future that is now in front of us? Please, dear gods, don't name me. Okay, well, don't put your name in the email next time.
We'll fix it in post.
But I'd love to hear your thoughts and or criticisms of her and TYT. I like their programs for the most part, but I got to take breaks often because I am easily emotionally distressed and their energy can be a lot. But like, so can literally everyone for her.
And you're listening to this show.
Yeah, I know, right? Now, this is a...
That's the main critique I get, is that I'm too fucking much.
This is a second email, but they're very much similar in what they're hitting on, so I'm gonna read it. This one's from Maggie. Your framing of TYT's actions as pandering to the right reminds me of MAGA's obsession with purity tests for rhinos. Progress requires strategic engagement, not rigid tribalism. TYT critiques Democrats not to, quote, throw the left under the bus, but to hold them accountable, fostering a stronger progressive movement. By misrepresenting this as a pivot, your critique risks alienating a critical ally in the fight for systemic reform. Moreover, TYT's engagement with conservatives is far from an endorsement of their views. Cenk Uygur himself has repeatedly explained that these conversations aim to build bridges where common ground exists, such as reducing Pentagon budgets and fighting corporate corruption, while holding firm on core values like LGBTQ rights and racial justice.
Oh, LGBTQ rights, really, as they've turned their back on the fucking trans community? Get the fuck out of here.
Dismissing this effort as phony ignores the nuanced work of expanding the progressive coalition.
Anyway.
Now, here's what I would say to this, because both of these emails touch on the progressive coalition aspect of this.
Yeah, which is important.
And purity testing.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. I don't know what we do in a progressive coalition where we have people who still call themselves the home of the progressives and the largest online progressive news network. Like you said, going on stage with Charlie Kirk at the USA event. I can't think of it right now.
Turning Point USA.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And they are trying to ally with Elon Musk and basically saying what Morning Joe said, right? Like that, let's see what happens. Let's give him a chance to be different.
Right.
Let's see if they cut the Pentagon budget. Do you think they're going to cut the Pentagon budget?
They haven't even, let's see what they do. They're going to be different. He hasn't, the only thing they promised they're going to do different is to be more radical and aggressive, to harm marginalized communities even more. That's the promise they've made.
Right.
That's the difference they're going to make.
And when we have Elon Musk, we're going to play these clips too. When we have Elon Musk on the phone with Mike Johnson, when we have Elon Musk calling the Republicans during the negotiation before the government shutdown, you think that Elon Musk is picking up the phone talking about corporate corruption?
And cutting the Pentagon budget, which lines his pockets with hundreds of millions of dollars?
Yeah.
Come on.
So again, we're falling into this trap of the Democratic Party not being the opposition. They need to be the opposition.
Also, you know, relative to the Cenk Uygur, Charlie Kirk thing, he in a subsequent justification Twitter thread, he talked about, and I'll just even talk about this. I've seen comments, because I did a video on this the other day on YouTube about his appearance, and people are like, well, some people, it was overwhelmingly suspect of Cenk and what the fuck's going on. But some people were like, well, listen, it doesn't hurt anything to be civil. Well, you could be civil. It doesn't, being civil, if he were to not go to Phoenix, not accept an invitation, it's not like he just was in the neighborhood and popped into the building. He accepted that there was a coordination between Charlie Kirk and Cenk where they emailed back and forth. Very likely, Turning Point USA paid for his travel and his hotel to be a guest. He showed up, went on stage with Charlie Kirk. They talked about all the things they have in common. And when something arose that they didn't have in common, he goes, look, yes, we disagree on gun reform. But you know what we can do after that? We can have a beer and be friends and shake hands as they embrace one another. That goes beyond being civil. What do we need to explain to the country what we have in common with someone who is a virulent, racist, white supremacist like Charlie Kirk, who platforms insurrectionists, who supported the ending of democracy in our country through overturning a free and fair settled American election and re-implanting Donald Trump extra-constitutionally, extra-democratically as president? We don't need to glad hand with these fucking people.
Yeah, and what I would say about the there's nothing wrong with being cordial. I don't know if cordial was the word that you used. There's nothing wrong with being
civil, cordial, civil, whatever.
Okay. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, certainly. And I don't know what positions they've previously taken on, like, punching Nazis in the face. I have no idea. But there are certain leftists who have, like, taken an affirmative stand on, yes, you should punch Nazis in the face.
Yeah.
Who are then, don't seem to have a problem with other leftists shaking Charlie Kirk's hand. So it's like, well, where are you on that? Because it seems kind of hypocritical. It seems inconsistent. I'm not really understanding where you actually stand. But there was a moment when Cenk was on stage with Charlie Kirk, and he asked the audience, in wanting to illustrate how they are right-wing populists, like he calls himself a left-wing populist.
Yeah, yeah.
And he says, we can agree on some things. For instance, how do we feel in this room about Mitch McConnell? And everyone boos, boo.
Yeah.
And he says, great, I agree. How does everyone in this room feel about Dick Cheney? Boo, they all boo.
Right.
Great, I agree. You know what he didn't ask? How does everyone in this room agree with an economic pop, a left-wing economic populist, AOC?
Right.
What would the response be in that case?
Of course, boo. Also, he just so happens to pick people who didn't endorse freely and openly Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Like, if those people had endorsed Donald Trump, they wouldn't be on the boo list. They would be, oh, welcomed with open arms. Yes, you're in the cult.
Right. And so when Maggie in their email here says that progress requires strategic engagement, not rigid tribalism, and that having these conversations can build bridges, what is Charlie Kirk willing to change his mind about? What left-wing positions is he flexible on endorsing?
He seems like a rigid tribalist to me. Right?
I mean, come on now. So it's just... I don't know.
What it is, here's what I think it is. It's fans. Like, you become a fan of someone, and then they can do no wrong. Mm-hmm. It's a little culty. Mm-hmm. Same deal. Same thing. Like, you can't criticize a Democrat. I've talked about Jared Moskowitz. I've talked about Morning Joe. I've talked about Blumenthal from Connecticut. I've talked about Fetterman. I've been talking about Democrats who are... demonstrating anticipatory obedience to Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Even before it's asked for, they're finding common ground. Well, yeah, you know, there are problems with our food supply system. Maybe RFK Jr. has a point. Yeah, I guess he does want to do away with the polio vaccine and bring disease and death back to the United States and by extension the world. But yeah, you know what? We do need to clean up our food supply. Well, of course we do. That doesn't mean he's the guy to do it. You could put... 100,000 other qualified people in there who agree about the food supply thing who don't want to wreck the world and take away vaccines.
Well, and yeah, and again, all of it's nebulous because what do they actually say about the food supply? Like, are they talking about the lettuce getting listeria? Well, it's like deregulation has led to that. They're the party that's for more deregulation.
For
so
sure.
So anyway, there's a lot of red flags. That's it. And I don't think that they are the leaders in the progressive movement. I don't think should be considered the leaders. I mean, even Jinx tweet about Matt Gaetz, you know, the ethics report came out finding that he paid a 17-year-old for sex, among other things. And Jinx tweeted, my conclusions, number one, Matt Gaetz paid for sex and drugs. I don't care. I also didn't care when Elliot Spitzer, Democratic governor of New York, did the similar thing. I care about policy, not their personal lives.
Well, when they're fucking children, Cenk.
Number two, I care deeply if he slept with a minor.
Oh, number two.
Oh, okay. And number four was none of the charges would have been brought up if he hadn't pissed off the establishment.
Oh, and his whole fucking refrain.
But
is
if
the
you go listen to TYT, Anna Kasparian did a segment before the report came out about Matt Gaetz, and it was the same vibe that Matt Gaetz has pissed off the establishment. This report wouldn't be coming out if he hadn't pissed off the establishment.
About the child rape though?
I don't think that's progressive. I think that's a problem. And there's just too many red flags.
You don't need to expend energy defending the deplorable, defending the indefensible. If you catch yourself wasting oxygen and burning calories defending Matt fucking Gaetz or Robert fucking Kennedy Jr. or Donald fucking Trump, you need to take a hard look at yourself.
And one last thing. I haven't seen Anna promote her Substack, but she has started kind of her own independent media thing that she's doing, apart from TYT. It's called Unaligned.
Oh, Unaligned.
And go look at the headlines. She locks all of it down, so you can't read it. You have to be a paid subscriber. Go look at the headlines. Go just read the headlines. Just go read the headlines and see what she's focusing on in her new media outlet.
Not only that, I watched a brief segment of an interview with her on with the dipshit British guy, Piers Morgan, where she literally said, this is a quote, maybe I was wrong about Dave Rubin.
Yeah.
Maybe I was wrong about turncoat, absolute grifter and charlatan liar, the guy who took $100,000 per video from Russia. Get out of here. They're not leaders. They're not progressives. They're no one we need to build community or coalition with.
Yeah, and I just don't think we should be afraid of criticizing people when they are doing things that are not beneficial for the progressive movement.
Right. Do you ignore the bad behavior because we need a coalition so desperately? No, we don't. There's plenty of people to align ourselves with and to ally with who have who have good intentions in their heart and in their motives to protect marginalized communities. And look, maybe not all the TYT. I don't know the cast of characters. All I know is Cenk and Anna. There's others that we could all rally around.
So thank you for those messages. We appreciate it. 657-464-7609, or you can send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. We want to thank very quickly our new Patreon members, new Patreon supporters. And the first one that we'd like to thank is Dor.
Dor.
Justin.
Justin.
Christine Y.O.
Christine Y.O.
Osclectic.
Osclectic.
I may not have gotten that right. Katie H.
Katie H.
Stephanie H.
Stephanie H.
Caitlin S.
Caitlin S.
Dominic K.
Dominic K.
Reggie.
Reggie.
Neil F.
Neil F.
Susan.
Susan.
D A.
D A.
Brian S.
Brian S.
Barb S.
Barb S.
Shauna A.
Shauna A.
And Sin.
Sin. Thank you, Sin.
Thank you so very much for your beautiful support of the show. We did announce on the last episode that we are doing the Patreon end of your gift, like we have done for the past couple of years. We were very delayed in announcing it because of, you know, the terror of the election.
Yeah.
And so we are doing that. We haven't done a, you know, strong push for people to sign up at the end of the year here, but we would love to have you join us on Patreon. And please update your addresses, your mailing addresses. Go into your account on Patreon. Update the address if you can. Make sure it's right. If you don't want us to send you one, you can just not put an address in. If you don't have an address in your Patreon account, you just won't get one. So if you want one, make sure that you have your mailing address updated in your Patreon account.
Which can be found at patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast. So you don't have to guess.
All right.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Dollamocracy, facing down pessimistic politics with realistic optimism.
So one of the Democrats that I was previously alluding to at the beginning of the show, 40 minutes ago, is Senator John Fetterman, who is suddenly being very strange. And
suddenly, I think, is very generous.
Well,
not suddenly being pretty strange.
Sure. That's true, because we started covering it a few months ago when he started denigrating the term progressive and acted like he had never called himself a progressive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is just not true.
It's a fuck absolute lie. He's a liar.
Yeah. Now he's eager to support some of Trump's nominees. He took a photo like smiling and giving a thumbs up with Elise Stefanik. He's eager to support her. He's eager to support Marco Rubio.
He popped out of his office when RFK Jr. walked by and made sure he got a handshake in there and then darted back into his office.
Right. So he's a problem. And he sat down with CNN's Mano Raju. No, he didn't. That was Joe Manchin.
I think with Jonathan Carl.
Yeah, he sat down with Jonathan Carl. We're going to be talking about Joe Manchin next. I was getting my clips mixed up. So he sat down with Jonathan Carl to talk about his meeting with Donald Trump's cabinet nominees and what this process is going to look like going forward.
So are you going to be Donald Trump's favorite Democrat in the Senate? I don't know what that really means, because you never know. But I am is I'm just a regular Democrat. I'm not leaving my party, but I'm not sure why some of the things that I've chosen to do, like meeting with nominees and having views that might be more aligned with some of the Republican side. I think that's part of politics, and that's pretty much consisting with just doing the job and representing the kind of state that we have in Pennsylvania.
Looking forward, what are you most optimistic about with a Trump presidency, and what do you fear?
Well, it's like I've been warning people, like, you got to chill out, you know, like the constant, you know, freak out. It's not helpful. So, you know, pack a lunch, pace yourself, because he hasn't even taken office yet.
Do you think he has the potential to be a successful and a good president?
I hope, because I'm not rooting against him. If you're rooting against the president, you are rooting against the nation. And I'm not ever going to be where I want a president to fail. So country first. I know it's become maybe like a cliche, but it happens to be true.
You can root against Donald Trump. You can root for the failure of Donald Trump's administration when Donald Trump's administration and their set policy priorities are mass deportation of millions of people who prop up the United States economy, who are sidling up to dictators and despots across the world. If Donald Trump fails, America succeeds. So John Fetterman should pull his head straight out of his substantial asshole and think about what he's saying.
This is, that's definitely one way to put it. So
it's the way I chose to put it.
This is similar to what Morning Joe said. This is what you are hearing from establishment Democrat types. They are saying, I'm not rooting against Donald Trump because that is rooting against the nation. And like you said, no, like I keep saying, I was going to reference something you said and then I can't remember what you said. This is not being the opposition party.
Yeah.
When Donald Trump stands for mass deportations on day one, ending birthright citizenship, rounding people up, ending qualified immunity for police officers. We never talk about that.
He incited a fucking insurrection against the country.
Yeah, I just...
You don't want to root for his failure? Fuck off.
Yeah, and then they keep doing this. I'm not leaving my party. Okay, well, it sounds like you are, because no one even brought that up, and you're like, why are you highlighting that?
Yeah, yeah. Also this... By the overarching important thing here is when he says, I'm not opposing Donald, all that's for Donald Trump's benefit.
Totally.
That's not, that's for John Fetterman's benefit, so Donald Trump won't turn on him, and it's for Donald Trump's benefit. It's not for his constituents' benefit.
And what he should have said to that first dumb question, are you going to be Trump's favorite Democrat, is who gives a shit?
Yeah. Exactly.
That's what I want to hear from someone who's asked that question. Why would I want to be...
Donald Trump's favorite anything.
Why would I want him to care about me at all?
Yeah.
I want him to wish I was dead. I don't care about him.
Yes.
So that's where John Fetterman's at. And there's another Democrat who's very similar, and we've been talking about him for a long time.
Yeah, thank God he's on the way out. Good fucking riddance, Joe Manchin.
Yeah, outgoing senator from West Virginia, Joe Manchin. And he's the one who sat down with CNN's Manu Raju, and they had like a yucking it up interview where Manu Raju was like laughing at his joke. Like, well, he wasn't making jokes, just laughing at the things he was saying. And
it's also heavily edited. I talked about this one on YouTube, and there are so many. Normally, you're in a studio and it's dead silent. You can't hear the edits.
Mm-hmm.
This one, because there's background bar noise, you can hear when the background noise changes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a jump cut on a YouTube video where they're in one position and then all of a sudden their hand is up in a different position. It's just like that. So they had to heavily edit this to make Joe Manchin even seem appealing at all.
Yeah, or like when the clock is on the wall in a shot and it's jumping around at different times.
Yes.
You told me that you were not going to vote for Kamala Harris. So who'd you vote for?
That's mine.
But you didn't vote for Trump either. That's fair to say.
I participate in the process. There's many ways to participate. And I've never asked people who they voted for because I could care less. Huh? I've never asked people who they vote for. I never said who I ever voted
for. Although, I remember, you wouldn't say if you voted for Obama the second time either. So
I participated.
But you did vote for Biden, and you did vote for Obama the first time.
Correct, first time.
Yes, but the second time you won't say.
First time, you're correct.
Okay, so you diagnose what's wrong with the Democratic Party. So what's wrong with the Republican Party?
Oh, my. Well, from the standpoint, just common sense. Okay, some gun sense.
So you think they're too extreme on the issue of guns?
They're too extreme. They're just common sense.
But besides guns, what would you say the problem is with the GOP?
Well, I'm just saying right now from the GOP has gone just, they haven't taken serious the debt. And they've always been debt concerned. They haven't taken debt. No one's even talked about it.
I remember you told me that you thought Trump was a threat to democracy at one point. I mean, you were very concerned.
January 6th was a bridge too far for me, and I think they all know that. But I got along fine with him. We still get along. We're friendly.
You were in the box this weekend at the Army-Navy game.
It wasn't that I was invited, but I wasn't thrown out.
You weren't invited?
No, I mean, they were just very cordial. Uh-huh. I was up in that area, and it's very close to that uh-huh. box. And then just kind of walked in. They were very accommodating. The president was very nice to me.
Talk to him?
Yeah,
what
sure.
What did you talk about?
No, we just talked about, you know, I want to help any way I can. I want you to succeed, which I've said every red-blooded American should want your president to succeed, whether you vote for him or not, whether the same party or not, whether you like him or not. I like Donald Trump. I can work with him. I can talk
with
him.
You like Donald Trump?
I get along fine.
You voted to convict him twice.
They should have never had those. Impeachment should have never been. Censorship should have been done.
On both times?
Yeah. Well, the second one's a hard one. That's a hard one. Yeah,
the first one should have been
censorship. For sure.
But even though you voted to convict him, you told him that you like him.
I still get along. We get along fine. Mm-hmm. No problem there.
One, I don't think censorship is a word. He was censured. He should have been censured. There's no censorship. That's not a thing. Secondly, January 6th was a bridge too far for me.
But we get along great.
What happened on January 6th that made it a bridge too far, but you get along great.
Right.
You like him.
Right.
And also, how lax is the security that I just wandered into the presidential suite at the Army Navy game?
Right.
I wasn't invited. I just wandered on in.
Please.
All the vague language. Eager to say who he did not vote for. I did not vote for Kamala Harris. I did not vote for Barack Obama the second time. But look, I'm not going to say who I voted for. Sounds like you voted for Donald Trump. You just don't want to say it.
Also, shouldn't a Democrat have more criticisms to list for Republicans than he does Democrats? Because he really struggled there when Manu Raju asked him, what is it about Republicans?
Well, they're always, the word he used was debt concerned.
Right.
They've always been debt concerned.
Yeah, they're so worried
about
it.
First of all, they say they're debt concerned.
Yeah.
But Donald Trump added like 30% more to the national debt.
Yeah.
In four fucking years, that's not debt concerned unless your concern is the debt's too low.
Well, and he's concerned. They're concerned about the debt right now.
Oh, because, of course.
Because Donald Trump's tax cuts for the wealthy and corporations are going to add to the deficit. And so he wanted to raise the debt ceiling in advance because it's going to add to the debt, you know, the thing that they're super concerned about.
Right.
Yeah. And he's mad that they haven't been taking it as seriously. He's not mad. I don't know why I use that word. But again, he says this John Fetterman line of, we should want the president to succeed.
Every red-blooded American, he said.
Succeed at what? Yeah. At the policies that he wants to implement? We don't want those policies to be implemented, Joe Manchin.
Yeah, if Donald Trump succeeds, the Comstock Act starts being prosecuted, and then mifepristone and abortion access is even more curtailed, and women's constitutional right to access to health care is going to be diminished.
Right.
If Donald Trump succeeds.
Joe, we don't want him to succeed. And the Democrats should be an opposition party, please, for the love of God.
Yeah, just crawl into your fucking coal mine. Let your pharmaceutical daughter fund the rest of your life, you yacht-living fucking ghoul.
Okay.
The views and opinions of Jesse Dolemore are solely those of Jesse Dolemore and do not reflect the views and opinions of Brittany Page, who is a far superior person and much more measured and reasonable in her views and analysis.
And we're
over 50 minutes in here.
Merry Christmas as well.
Yeah. Christmas Eve, everybody.
So
I'm not going to be able to get through all these clips you have set.
Yeah, we aren't doing them. So let's talk about let's skip the next one and let's do Representative Jerry Connolly of Virginia, who is going to be the top Democrat on the House Oversight Committee.
Because Nancy Pelosi, she orchestrated a revolt against the candidacy for AOC to be the head of the House Oversight Committee for Democrats.
Right. And Jerry Connolly is 74 years old.
Actively has esophageal cancer. He's battling cancer in the fucking moment.
Correct. And
what are we doing?
So, I know. Listen, I hear from people all the time who will message me, and they're just like, how are we supposed to, like, it becomes a dilemma, because we can't lose hope, but it's also like, what the hell, right? And I hope that this will be a wake-up call to people to really get involved with their representatives.
Yes.
You need to know who they are, and you need to be calling them, and you need to be telling them what they should be doing, how they should be voting.
How they should be representing your values, your concerns, your policy objectives.
And you know what might be fun? Is like gathering your friends. Like tell them that you're having a New Year's Eve party. And then when they all come over, you have like printed documents of how to contact your representatives
and
who they
You're
are.
You're talking about our listeners staging a fucking ambush of their friends.
No, it's a party.
It's a holiday ambush.
This is how I like parties to go. And everyone can come over and you can give them the necessary information that they need. And then you can host additional parties in the future that are less ambush-like in nature. And together, with everyone's consent, they can come over and you can, like, call the representatives together.
Ambush,
right?
Adjacent, you mean.
But what I'm saying is we need to get involved with
this.
Yes,
yes.
And people are losing hope and they're saying there's no point in doing that. If you throw in the towel and say there's no point, there will be no point.
Yeah, it'll be over.
But you know who has not said that?
AOC.
Anti-abortion activists.
Oh,
for
I thought you were going to go back to AOC.
These people do not give up. These people do not say that society's against us. Society isn't on our side.
The quote-unquote pro-lifers who reversed 50 years of legal precedent, hobnobbed, had prayer vigils with Supreme Court justices in the building that houses the Supreme Court. These people have been fucking relentless, and look what they got. It took time. But they achieved their objective.
Totally. You think the Federalist Society is like, oh no, we had a defeat.
Right.
No. They buckle down and they get to work and they keep pushing.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to do. And now I feel bad playing this clip from Jerry Connolly because it's going to be a reminder of the disappointment. But
it should inflame your passions. It shouldn't depress you to where you crawl into a hole and go away.
Totally.
It should make you want to fucking fight.
Yeah, so here he is being asked about what it means that he beat AOC.
You ran against Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. You won decisively, 131 votes to 84 votes. What does that say, do you think, to the American people about where the Democratic Party is?
So I think there's been a lot of nonsense, frankly, on the generational change. What the Democratic Caucus did was try to put their best generals on the battleground. Who's qualified? Who has proved their mettle? Who's got the skill set? And it had nothing to do with how old people were. It had to do with do they bring capability? Can they function? And that was the choice before my caucus. Alexandria's a rising star, has a lot of talent, but she's three terms. I'm going to begin my ninth. I've got a lot of experience. I know the committee backward and forward. I've been involved in every major issue in 16 years. I know how to take on the Republicans. I'm known as a bulldog. Those are skill sets we need as we face four more years of Trump and an unstable Republican majority.
Yeah, because when you think of bulldog, who's the biggest bulldog in the House? You think Jerry Connolly. Come on.
I know. And that's what's so disappointing is AOC is a star for a reason. And that's because she's talented.
It's because she's a fucking bulldog.
And she knows how to build coalitions.
Yeah.
She knows how to educate people. She knows how to get people invested in these issues and bring people together and bring people along. And you feel inspired when you listen to her. There's a reason why there's so few people that you identify as political talents, because it's a rare thing.
Yes.
And she has that quality. This guy doesn't. I mean, sorry to him. I'm sure he's had a great career and it sounds like he knows what he's doing and all that's fine and great. But no, we need new ideas. We need people who are fierce and ready to go.
I would venture a guess that the vast majority of the audience didn't know who Jerry Connolly was until today.
Oh, yeah.
And look, he's probably great. He represents a district here, Fairfax County, I believe, right across the river from Washington, D.C. He's a local. And I'm not saying he's a bad person, but he wasn't the best person for the job. He just was not the best person for the job. All of these septuagenarians and octogenarians who are recalcitrant and resistant to turn over their power to a younger generation, it's exactly what happened with Joe Biden, and look where the fuck that got us.
Right, and that's the thing. This isn't an ageism thing, right? I think a lot of people hear the arguments and they go, you know, this is ageism. No, that's not what it is, but you're turning people off of wanting to support the Democratic Party when you keep returning to these older people that will not give up their power.
Older and moderate.
Totally. Yeah, they're not the progressive wing of the party. They are the ones who are still saying that we can work with Republicans, that they have had a nice time working with Mitch McConnell.
My good friend across the aisle.
Yeah, done with it.
Done.
Done with it. Apparently not, though.
Yeah.
But Elon Musk is basically the vice president-elect. We hardly hear about J.D. Vance anymore. We hear about Elon Musk all the time. And during the negotiations that were going on before the government shutdown, we heard his name all the time, constantly. He was constantly on the phone with Republicans. He was in the room. He was doing the work.
He orchestrated Republicans reneging on a negotiated deal that was already settled. And he started tweeting to his 200 million followers or whatever nonsense. And then they scuttled the deal.
Right. So this was before the government shutdown was averted. And this is an interview with Florida Representative Carlos Jimenez talking about Elon Musk needing to give him a compelling argument.
Are you frustrated that Elon Musk is meddling in this?
Elon Musk is a private citizen, and we see tweets all the time. And so, no, he has a right to tweet whatever he wants, like every other American citizen has a right to tweet whatever they want. And so, no, it doesn't bother me one bit.
Well, he's a private citizen who happens to be a billionaire and have the ear of the president-elect of the United States. He seems to have outdue influence here. Would you not say agree with that?
It all depends on the individual, whether he has undue influence or not. For me, Elon Musk is a private citizen, has the right to tweet, and I'll listen to him. Yeah, everybody knows who he is, but will that sway me one way or the other unless he has a compelling argument? He needs to have a compelling argument in order to sway me. I've already told you that this is a Republican bill. I'll be voting for either the CR or, if it comes through a rule, I'll vote for that too.
Congressman, couldn't all this chaos have been avoided if President-elect Trump didn't make that last-minute demand on the debt ceiling?
Well, he wants the debt ceiling lifted, and I think he has every right, and I actually supported him doing that and supported the CR yesterday. And the majority of the Republicans supported that CR yesterday. Some did not. All of the Democrats did not. So obviously yesterday's bill was a Republican bill that the Democrats didn't like. This bill is still a Republican bill. Let's see what the Democrats do with it. But I intend to vote for it either way, as a CR or as a rule.
He's talking about continuing resolution. It's so maddening. After all of these years, it's so transparent, the Republicans, all this is politics. Wanting, if Donald Trump wants to extend the debt ceiling, it's a good idea. But every time Democrats are in power, Republicans refuse to do it, and they make political hay out of it.
Right.
They're just fucking liars.
Totally.
But let's have a beer with them. and let's shake hands with them. And let's just, we can agree to disagree as you send our most vulnerable communities spiraling with no funding to help them, especially during this time of the year. Fuck off.
There was even one of the Johns, or I think it's one of the, I think it was Tommy Vitor, who is associated with the Johns, but he's not a John.
He's also, what, didn't he do the thing where he's giving cover for the Doge?
Yeah, he was like,
caucus.
He was saying, I also support, you know, reeling in unnecessary government spending or something like that, which is what the stated goal and mission, I guess, of Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy's.
The stated goal, but it's obviously not what they want.
No, it's self-protection. Elon right. Musk, that's why I appreciate this reporter being like, okay, yeah, you're calling him a private citizen, but he's a billionaire who has the ear of the president-elect and who's in these rooms and who's making phone calls and who's directly pressuring because of his own policy priorities. He's not in there worried about everyday people.
Right.
He's made how many billions of dollars since Donald Trump won the election? His net worth?
He's also said, yeah, there's going to be hard times ahead. People are going to have to sacrifice to get onto the other side when things are good. Things aren't going to be bad for him. There's not going to be sacrifice on his part.
Yeah, this is absurd. It's absolutely absurd.
He's worth over a third of a trillion fucking dollars.
Yeah.
It is an insane amount of money.
Yeah, and he's, like I said, he's made, isn't it, billions of dollars since Donald Trump won the election? His net worth has gone up.
I think it's gone up upwards of $150 billion.
And people think that this man has their best interests in mind.
Right.
It's absolutely horrifying.
Yeah.
But Mike Johnson, Speaker Mike Johnson, is also one of these people who is, you know, in the box with Joe Manchin and Elon Musk and Donald Trump at the Army-Navy game. Oh, and J.D. Vance was there, too. And Mike Johnson is, you know, he has to cater to Donald Trump. He has to cater to the whims of Donald Trump and Elon Musk. And when he was going through this process with the pending government shutdown, he also talked to Elon Musk and said this to reporters.
Come as well. Elon Musk and I talked within about an hour ago, and we talked about the extraordinary challenges of this job. And I said, hey, you want to be Speaker of the House? I don't know. He said, this may be the hardest job in the world. I think it is. But we're going to get through this. We are going to unify this country, and we are going to bring the America First agenda to the people beginning in January. We cannot wait to get started. I hope you all have a great holiday.
Interesting, very interesting that he brings up the Elon Musk being Speaker of the House thing, because that thing that's being floated right now.
Yeah.
Because you don't need to be a member of Congress to be appointed, to be voted to be Speaker of the House.
Right.
And it's actually a movement afoot to make Elon Musk the Speaker of the House of Representatives.
Yeah. So when I heard Mike Johnson say that.
Yeah.
Now here's what I think is working is people talking about Elon Musk being the president. That he's actually the one who's in charge, not Donald Trump, that he's actually the one making the decisions. Because some on the left are panicking, right? What are we going to do? How do we get Elon Musk out of these rooms? How do we get him to stop being the one picking up the phone when Mike Johnson calls? This is horrifying. No one elected him. He's just a billionaire. This is terrifying. Yeah. Well, I think one of the ways that we do that is Democrats keep saying that Donald Trump is not actually the one calling the shots and Elon Musk is. How do I know this is something that is going to upset Donald Trump? Well, we're already starting to get signs that it's upsetting him because of what he said at the Turning Point USA event.
And he got over 2,000 units. That's a lot. And they flooded it with Starlink, and it was so good. It saved a lot of lives, so we want to thank him. But no, he's not going to be president, that I can tell you. And I'm safe. You know why? He can't be. He wasn't born in this country.
Not because of democracy. He's not going to be. He's not going to be president. You know why? Well, because he wasn't elected president through our democratic processes. No, it's because he wasn't born here. Oh, I'm safe.
What I also love about it is inevitably Donald Trump knows that people are talking about Elon Musk being the one calling the shots to get under Donald Trump's skin.
All of the AI-generated fucking images and shit, they do get to him.
Inevitably, he knows that the reason that people are doing all that is to get to him, but that knowledge isn't enough to overcome the feelings and the insecurity that it brings up for him.
Listen, I'm insecure in a host of different ways. Everyone is, right?
Yeah.
Everyone is, right? Right?
We all are.
other people are insecure too, right? But let me tell you, I don't understand being president of the United States of America and having that not somehow boost your confidence level, boost your ego in a way that makes you less insecure. He's cripplingly insecure.
You know when Tom and Shiv are fighting on the balcony in Succession in the last season, and he looks at her and he goes, "And you are broken." And he like snaps his hands and makes a breaking motion.
Yeah, I think so.
That's what just came to mind for me with Donald Trump. Yeah. But that's what it is. I mean, he's...
Does he also have barnacle meat, fat earlobes or whatever? Chewy barnacle meat earlobes?
Your earlobes are chewy like barnacle meat. If you guys don't watch Succession, I don't know what you're doing with your lives. Start it on Christmas Day with your family.
Every character is terrible.
Don't start it on Christmas Day with your family. So he is, though, and there's going to be nothing that he can tell himself to overcome the sensitive feelings that come up when people are saying this about Elon Musk. So keep saying it. Go hard with it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, most people would be able to say, oh, the reason this person's attacking me is because of this and this and this, and here's their underlying motivation. So I don't need to worry about that. I'm not going to, like, spend time worrying about that.
Donald Trump doesn't have that ability.
Yeah, he can't do that. He's like, oh, my God. Oh, no. So keep it going. Keep that going. And I know this isn't, like, a Christmas... very Christmassy episode, but I think we're going to end it there. And
the rules were that you guys weren't going to fact check.
Exactly. Except for this has not been a Christmassy episode. And so, but there's no Christmas drops. I know you're panicking looking for one. And then you play the JD Vance drop because you thought maybe it would add something Christmassy to the vibe, but it's not. And I'm giving you time to really look at it.
I'm not going to play one. No. I'm not going to give you what you want. I know you're desperate for me to play a drop. I'm not going to do it.
Okay. So
she's not a Christian.
That's the best one. That actually is fitting.
A little
for Christmas.
Christmassy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
All right. You do the rap. You do it. That's the Christmas gift that you're going to leave us with today.
All right. We appreciate you guys. Thank you very much for joining us for this 935th episode of I Doubt It podcast. Mm-hmm. We love and appreciate you. We would ask that you sound off and join this conversation. 657-464-70. How long can I keep doing this? 7609. Of course, you can email a voice memo from your smartphone or a regular old-fashioned email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. Please consider becoming a monthly contributor to support and produce this program. You can do so at patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast. Seriously, though. Seriously, folks. Seriously. Have a good holiday season. We love and appreciate you guys very much. We know that this time of year is especially fraught with depression and feelings, and that is all made even worse. It's compounded by the politics and our current situation in the country, and by extension, the world. So find a community. There's community around this show. I don't know. We love you guys, though. We appreciate you. Happy holidays. We'll see you next time. Until then, for Brittany Page, I'm Jesse Dollimore, and this has been I Doubt It.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.